Today on Vox Talks, would a clampdown on tech mergers cause more problems than it solves? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. The activities of five American tech companies, Google, Amazon, Facebook, Apple, and Microsoft, you might have heard of them, are causing economists and regulators to consider a rethink of antitrust policy. But if the problem of concentration or market power seems clear, it's less obvious what we should do about it. Some economists are advocating an antitrust revolution, and one of the consequences would be to make it less easy for tech giants to acquire other firms. But a new CEPR discussion paper by Luis Cabral of NYU, he's a CEPR fellow, warns against shifting merger policy rules in tech too far, too fast. When I spoke to Luis, I asked him, did he agree, though, that there was a problem that needed to be solved?
I think there is one, and I think most people would agree that the power of the large high-tech titans is probably a bit too big, and that they have been frequently abusing of their power, in particular their market power. I do agree that there is a problem and something needs to be done.
Now, there are some revolutionaries, as I said, but there are also many economists who are advocating using the existing rules to tighten the screws, I think you call it in your paper, on merger policy. You're in this camp, I think.
Yes and no. I do believe that there's a lot to be done in terms of antitrust policy. There are a lot of tightening of screws that needs to be done, as you mentioned. I only think that there are several instruments that regulators have with respect to high-tech firms, and that merger policy is probably not the first one that I would have chosen. This is a point in which I beg to differ from what you might call the common wisdom regarding where antitrust should go in the next few years regarding high-tech firms.
So let's look at your arguments in this. Many people are worried by what's known as the preemptive acquisition, the idea that a young firm with a bright idea is gobbled up very quickly before it can build a customer base that might threaten one of the tech giants. Your argument, I think, is that in many cases, it's impossible to predict how business models will evolve or even which companies will end up as competitors. So this is very hard to regulate.
That is correct. In fact, the point I'm trying to make is that high-tech firms in the digital space behave in a way that is very different from more traditional industries, such as, for example, pharma, where business models are easier to understand and, in particular, easier to predict. Business models in the digital space are extremely difficult to predict, even by the players themselves. If you go back and look at the history of Google or Facebook or whatever, and what they had in mind regarding what their strategy would be, they had no idea where they would be in 2020, but much less will regulators have. And so precisely because there's so much uncertainty, I believe that merger policy with respect to high-tech firms is a bit like chemotherapy for cancer. You're trying to kill cancer cells, but in the process, you're killing a lot of other cells, healthy ones. And until we have, to continue with the analogy, a very good technology for targeting chemical treatment to cancer cells, it's always going to be a very, very imperfect form of treatment. Likewise, merger policy in the realm of high tech is a very poorly targeted policy because it kills a lot of preemptive mergers, correct, but it also kills a lot of mergers that would have added an enormous value to the consumer. Mergers where there's a complementarity between a technology brought about by a market entrant and an existing platform from one of the large tech companies. And precisely because in the digital world, it's so difficult to distinguish the preemptive from the value increasing, because sometimes we are years away from understanding exactly what this new technology is, I think that a tighter merger policy would be like an indiscriminatory high-level chemotherapy treatment. It would kill a lot of good innovation, not only for the reasons that I just mentioned, but also because the prospect of being acquired by one of the large firms is one of the main engines of incentive for innovation for small startups. You go to Silicon Valley, to Tel Aviv, to New York, to any of the high-tech centers of this world, and you'll see that one of the exit strategies for many of these startups is precisely to be acquired. And the moment we have a very stringent policy against acquisitions by large firms, we are likely going to produce significant harm to these innovation incentives.
I've been involved with a few startups. I can't remember a single one that wanted to hold out to become Google, but many of them would have liked to have been acquired by Google. I guess that goes for the investors in those startups as well. They're not looking for an exit in 15, 20 years.
That is correct. Of course, it varies a little bit. It's one of the examples that I have in my discussion paper. Google did receive an offer early on for $1 million, while I believe the founders were still graduate students at Stanford, and they turned it down. Thank goodness for that. Innovators are stubborn enough to believe that they can do better than the offers that they receive. So there's a little bit of everything. There are many new startups that proceed to become dominant firms. I don't know where the next Google is going to be, but I'm pretty sure there will be a next Google. One of the analogies that I like to make is the discussion we're now having in many ways is not entirely different from the discussion we had in the late 1990s regarding Microsoft. Mm. A dominant firm that was abusing of its dominant position. And people said, we're going to stay with this monopoly forever. Therefore, we need to break up Microsoft. And now it seems like something in the distant past, no one thinks anymore of Microsoft as a stifling monopolist that it probably once was. There will be a new Google. There will be a new Facebook. But in the meantime, there'll be many smaller startups who will simply be acquired. And that's all part of the ecosystem of innovation in the digital world.
You also look at the role of mergers as a way to do technology transfer. You're making the argument that it's a very efficient way to do this in this sector. How do you do tech transfer by acquisition?
That's a very good question. So that's related precisely to the good sales, to go back to an analogy that I was making earlier. Many of the acquisitions of small firms by large firms correspond to effectively the transfer of technology from the startups to the large corporations. Frequently, technology transfer is made by patent licensing or patent acquisition. The problem is that in the digital world, it's very difficult to protect intellectual property by means of patents or copyright, for that matter. We've had numerous examples of that in the past. For that reason, the way technology is transferred frequently is by means of acquisition. So in the process of making mergers more difficult, or acquisitions, if you want to call it that way, we're also making technology transfer more difficult to take place. In addition to the fact that patents and copyright are not always a good way of protecting intellectual property in the digital world, we also have the fact that frequently the technology is embedded in some ways in the human capital of the people who created it. And frequently what these acquisitions do also is to transfer that human capital by bringing in some of the innovators or inventors to work in the large firms. The point is, software innovations in the digital world are quite different from innovations, say, in pharma or biotech or other better defined fields where technology is sufficiently well defined and codified in a patent that we don't need to buy a corporation to get that technology.
Yes, when you look at a lot of economic research about this, it always seems to fix on the idea of patents and numbers of patents. What we're saying here is just in this particular sector, it is much more nuanced and the definition of intellectual property is much broader, less well-defined.
I think that's exactly right. Another indicator of that, I would say, just look at the levels of patent litigation by field. There's been an extraordinary explosion in patent litigation in the past few decades. It's mostly caused by patents in the digital space because they're poorly defined. Look at the court battles between Samsung and Apple. But it's just one of many, many, many examples that really corroborate this idea that it's just not a good institution in this world. That just as we have to rethink antitrust in the context of the digital space, we also have to rethink IP in the context of the digital space. Frequently, trade secrets are a better way of doing it. In other words, business is done in a different way. And I believe that competition policy should also reflect that idiosyncrasy of the digital space.
But you're certainly not making the argument that in the tech sector and for these giant tech companies that regulators should just look the other way when they make acquisitions. So how can we make merger policy in high tech work better?
My point is that competition policy is a lot more than merger policy. Mm-hmm. So perhaps merger policy is not the best treatment, to continue with my analogy, but there are other treatments. And in particular, I would point to the fact that the level of regulation in the world of high tech is extremely low. We can look back at the example of 20th century large dominant firms and monopolies, like in telecommunications, in utilities like gas and electricity, and so forth. And those firms were subject to regulation. It was understood that breaking them up in small pieces was probably not a good idea. It was understood that competition was limited and would always be very limited. And therefore, it was understood that the optimal way of protecting consumer interests and in general protecting competition was to regulate those firms in some way or form. And I think we have seen very little of that in the world of high tech, and we probably should see more. The marginal value of a dollar or a euro spent in a regulation of high tech companies is probably worth a lot more than a marginal dollar or euro spent in merger policy in this field. We just heard in the news last week that the U.S. Department of Justice is planning a large investigation on Google, perhaps starting this summer. I think it's about time we start taking things seriously in those spaces. And there's a lot that can be done, as I said, by regulating those companies, by having specific limitations on what they can do, what they cannot do, rather than preventing them from acquiring small startups.
So perhaps not regulating ex ante when it comes to the mergers, but looking ex post.
Yeah, I think that is a very good way of putting it. And it's something that, by the way, economic theorists have thought about. There's a recent very interesting paper on how best to regulate safety on medical drugs, which is an interesting question. And you could put a lot more weight on ex ante actions, for example, testing, create huge barriers for testing. That's one way to do that. Another way could be to regulate it ex post. You know, the moment we see the first sign that this works or does not work, you have to do A, B, or C. Those two forms of instruments, they're two different approaches towards the same end. In some cases, putting more effort into ex ante measures, of which merger review would be one, is a bad idea. In other cases, putting more resources into ex post fixing of problems is probably the better way to do it. And I believe that in the world of high tech, it's probably a case when ex post regulation works better than merger review. I don't think it's true, generally speaking. I agree that in the past 20 years, we've been far, far too lenient when it comes to merger policy in a variety of sectors. Airlines, hospitals, healthcare sector more generally, many, many other sectors where we've had far too many mergers with respect to what social welfare would indicate. And so there's clearly a case for tighter merger policy. I just don't think that high tech is the sector that we should be looking at more closely.
Does this mean that we are inevitably heading for a regulatory regime in which high tech is regulated in a slightly different way to other industries?
I think so. Slightly different way, but not entirely different. The idea of regulating quasi-monopolies is not new. We've done that for decades, and we've done that imperfectly, of course, but by and large, I believe, with some success. Just to give you an example, you know, if you look at some of the problems of abusive dominant position, in my opinion, Google favoring their own sites or sites that they are affiliated with or they have an interest in with respect to other sites. That was part of the European Union case against Google. And I think that's one example of abuse of dominant position. Or Apple favoring its own music service against Spotify. That's another example of abuse of dominant position by a dominant firm. Or Amazon favoring its own products in its recommender system. This kind of favoring your own downstream products by a large corporation, this is not something new. This is something we've observed in many, many industries, such as telecommunications, airports and airlines, and so forth. We have a lot of experience on how to regulate quasi-monopolies in this context. So why not do the same thing for high-tech firms? It's long overdue, in my opinion.
With the economic crisis that we are going through at the moment, there will be a lot of firms that are in trouble, maybe looking to get acquired. There'll be a lot of pressure on regulatory authorities to wave those mergers through. Do you think this is a potential problem?
I think there are many industries outside of the high-tech world where the so-called failing firm defense will probably apply. There are many estimates, and I'm not an expert in that. Many of the jobs that were temporarily lost will correspond to permanent losses. And in that sense, I believe that there may be some role for a cautious treatment of a merger review so as to save jobs that can be saved. But that would correspond to, in my opinion, sectors other than the high-tech sector. There's also, I suppose, the possibility of large corporations taking advantage of a moment of temporary crisis to acquire competitors or potential competitors. In that sense, yes, I suppose that it could be a reason for a particular care on the part of antitrust authorities not to allow mergers that would normally be considered anti-competitive. There's always this trade-off between avoiding inefficient losses on one hand, and on the other hand, avoiding increases in market power. But I don't think that is particularly applicable to the so-called GAFM firms or GAFA firms. I think there are many other sectors for which that would be applicable, but perhaps not so much for high tech.
Luis, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
The paper that we were talking about is Merger Policy in Digital Industries. The author is Luis Cabral, of course, and it is available at the CEPR website. It's discussion paper 14785. If you enjoyed this, you'll be interested in another discussion we had on this topic, and that's a Vox Talk from the 28th of February with Tommaso Dusso of DIW Berlin. He argued that competition authorities should have intervened more often in previous tech mergers, so you might want to compare what he had to say. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the most innovative economic research every week, so subscribe to Vox Talks and you'll never miss an episode. And remember, you can find 10 years of Vox Talks at voxeu.org/vox-talks.